Today's subject I wanted to talk about is something that I've been thinking about probably since I went to Birmingham to bring my stuff here a few weeks ago, when I got my brother and we got a truck and we brought all my stuff, furniture, things to make it feel like at home, because I was sleeping on a air mattress until then, and that wasn't the greatest thing. It's nice to have a bed now. But I was thinking about this because I had a conversation with a person on the airplane that got me thinking about these things. And on this airplane flight, it was actually the flight that went from Tyler to Dallas, which is a short flight. If anybody's ever flew that, it's maybe 20 minutes in the air at the most. And I was waiting in the airport beforehand, and somebody came up to me, and she asked me, she's like, something about the airplane, how long does it take or whatever. I was like, well, I told her that, and that was it. And then as we sat on the plane, get on the plane and you load up whatever, it seems like we end up sitting right beside each other on the plane. And she immediately says, well, maybe that wasn't a coincidence. Maybe that was on purpose or something. And I'm like, I don't know if that's on purpose or a coincidence, but it got us talking about that subject, about, and especially about God and the Bible, and you know, is things in our lives, do they happen on purpose? Is there a purpose? Does God have a plan for us? Does he interact in our lives to bring us to the points that we are in our life? Or is it just time and chance? Is it just random? Was it just a random meeting that I'm, you know, probably, I really don't know. And I don't know if I have that kind of wisdom to say what's random and what's not, but there's maybe some things we can look into to see if God does interact in our lives. You know, is God active today? Some say there would be no evidence of this. I mean, we don't have people in our church calling fire down from heaven, do we? That would be, fire comes down from heaven, that would be a pretty good sign that God's active, right? You know, that's something we don't see very often. Or I can imagine Israel in the wilderness and seeing the pillar of smoke and the pillar of fire at night, and I would say that's a pretty good sign that God's active. God is there among them. So we don't see those kind of things. And if you think about it, if you think of history and you think of the great miracles, we really, as far as time and chance go, don't really have much chance of encountering those, do we? Something that of that magnitude. There's only a few people saw the Red Sea part, right? It's not everybody in all of history, if you think of everyone who've witnessed these miracles. And we know that God answers prayers, don't we? God answers prayers. I know a lot of times God has answered prayers in my life. But we know sometimes our prayers go unanswered, don't they? We'll ask for prayer for someone, our loved one, or in a church, and they don't get better, do they, sometimes? So sometimes it seems, and maybe someone too is a critic or doesn't understand God, that the prayers are unanswered, and that God maybe is not active in situations. Why doesn't God prevent tragedy? We have hurricanes, earthquakes, shootings. I wrote shootings in here, and I just heard there was a shooting just down the road from here today at the mall. Someone was laying, probably as we drove by there, if we drove from that way, was laying in the parking lot dead. So there are shootings, there's violence, wars, car accidents. Has anybody ever been in a car accident here? Was it your fault? Sometimes, well, I think one probably might have been my fault. It was my fault. But a lot of times, it wasn't my fault. I'm doing everything I can to obey the speed limit, to stay in my lane. And I remember there was a car accident when I was in Atlanta that happened. And, you know, I thought that what could have I done to have avoided this accident? I'm going to talk about that a little bit later. I'm probably skipping ahead in my notes. Have you ever lost your keys? Has anybody lost their keys? I've lost my keys. And if you lost your keys, did you ask God to help you find them? Because, I mean, that's kind of my reaction, my gut reaction sometimes when things go wrong. Because I think one time I lost my keys and I had to be at work. Or not here, but I mean, I had to be at work. And I was going to be late if I didn't find my keys. And it was, you know, maybe it was very important that I was there on time. And I was looking for my keys in the house. I was like, what, you know, I always put my keys like at a certain place. I actually have a bowl that I put my keys and my wallet in, and I kind of did that from losing them so much that I have a bowl now, right? This is where I'm going to put my keys and my wallet, but they weren't in the bowl. and it drew me off, and I was panicking because I was like, I got to get these keys. What's going to happen? It's putting me behind. I'm looking. You start turning stuff over. You say, well, what was in the living room? open up the couch or whatever and look in there. And say, no, it's not the couch. Maybe it's in the car. You go look in the car. You walk around. And we will ask God for help to find our keys. But God's not like a genie, is he? It's not like a magic wish. It's like, God, please help me find my keys. And all of a sudden, oh, yeah, there they are right there. They just appear in front of me. And I've learned probably from losing the keys so much that it's better to ask for patience and wisdom to find the keys. Because that's what God will give me. I don't think he's going to miraculously make those keys appear in my pocket. They may have been there all along. I mean, and sometimes that's happened too, right? Oh, there they are in my pocket. So God's not like a genie. You know, we can't make wishes that come true. Let's turn to Luke chapter 13. And this is something I usually think about. Usually when maybe there's a tragedy or we have like a earthquake, tsunami or such. You know, I think a lot of us think of this in Luke 13. And so Luke 13 verse 1 says, there was present at that season some who told him about the Galileans whose blood Pilate had mingled with their sacrifices. And Jesus answered and said to them, do you suppose that these Galileans were worse sinners than all the other Galileans because they suffered such things? People were being picked out at random and were killed. And it's, you know, it's like, why is this happening? These people are being killed. And he says, do you think they were worse sinners? He says, I tell you no, but unless you repent, you all will likewise perish. He says, or of those 18 on whom the tower in Siloam fell and killed them, do you think they were worse sinners than all other men who dwelt in Jerusalem? He says, I tell you no, but unless you repent, you will all likewise perish. So there's a tower that fell, and they all knew about this tower. And it kind of shows you like a time and chance thing, but the thing that I see is unless you repent, you shall all likewise perish. So there's something maybe different in your life if you are repentant, if you turn to God. There's something, God is active in your life, but things do happen. People will have car accidents. People have heart attacks, aneurysms, shootings. Amongst people in the God's church, right? This is not in the world. In the church of God, tragedies happen. Things happen. Let's go to Ecclesiastes. Ecclesiastes chapter 9, verse 11. As I returned and saw under the sun that the race is not to the swift, nor the battle to the strong, nor bread to the wise, nor riches to men of understanding, nor favor to men of skill, but time and chance happen to them all, right? Some people are born with a lot more money than I have, right? A lot more money than we have. Some people are born into certain situations. Some people luck into things, don't they? And, you know, sometimes when we're in our car, I was in my car in Atlanta, and there was it was a Friday evening, and there was going to be a wedding the next day, and I was going to go to the wedding rehearsal. And so that's an important thing to go to, that I probably should be there if I'm going to be performing a wedding. We're going to get things organized so that the wedding goes well. And I was staying with some friends in Atlanta, and I backed out of their driveway, and I was on my road on to do something I thought was a good thing. Within maybe 10 seconds, somebody runs a stop sign, and they're coming straight for me, right in my lane. And so, you know, I do the best I can do is going to pull out, but they run into my car, and there's an accident. And then I can't make it to that rehearsal. We still had the wedding the next day. They just had to rehearse and pretend that, you know, somebody take my place in that rehearsal. Now, I could be superstitious about that, because a lot of times we will take maybe things that may be random or time and chance, and we'll maybe try to assign meaning to them. Right? I could say, oh, well, maybe God doesn't want me to marry these folks. Some people who are superstitious could take that as a sign or something, right? You know, maybe this is it. This is God sending me this message. And a lot of times there's a thing called confirmation bias. I don't know if you've ever heard of confirmation bias. And that's basically we correlate things together to have meaning that really have no correlation at all. Like, for instance, I could be thinking about a relative or something, like, and this happens to people, somebody thinks of a relative, and then they get a phone call, and they find that relative's in the hospital or something. And they're like, oh, I was just thinking of them. So maybe I have some kind of psychic power, because there's a correlation there. But again, if you take the statistics of how often you think about somebody and how often something happens, things are going to happen. It's time and chance. It's like I had a dream one night that there was a building on fire, and I woke up and I found out in the news a building was on fire in the news. And so I could accept that, because some people take this and say, oh, God's telling me something in my dreams about, you know, I should be paying more attention, or, you know, I could take that to there. But again, you know, how often do I dream about that? You know, I do dream about all types of things, and most of them, right, don't come true. So there's a certain confirmation bias that we could take with things, and maybe read into things that aren't there. So we have to be careful of that. So it talks about time and chance. It happens to us all. I want to look in just Genesis 1, just one verse in Genesis 1, and maybe explain why we have time and chance, why we need the time and chance, why things are the way they are. Genesis 1 and verse 26. And then God said, let us make man in our image, according to our likeness. Let them have dominion over the fish of the sea, over the birds of the air, and over the cattle, over all the earth, and so on. So we're made in the image of God. And so to be in God's image, we are given choices. We were given choices. So it was that person who ran into me in the car, it was their choice to run that stop sign. And for God, for us to be in his image, he gave us choice, right? Whether to obey him or disobey, whether to make this decision or that decision. And in order for us not to be robots, even though maybe I'm obeying the law, keep God's laws, and sometimes we wonder where the blessings are, other people can mess it up for us, right? Because they have a choice, and they can choose things. Now, that doesn't mean that God can't intervene, because I know times that God has intervened and saved my life from accidents and been miracles. But we have choices. We have free will, and so that's why shootings happen. It's why we have problems. And it's that way because God's plan, he's recreating himself, and he wants us to be like him, and so he gives us that freedom to have those choices. So the question was, is God active in our world, in our lives? I could get up here and, you know, and make a case that he isn't. A lot of people have. Is it just time and chance? Is it just because we're in here because we watched a television show? I just happened to be, you know, up and tuned in and watched this show, and just a random event, and I wrote in for something, and I got that. And so, and that's the reason I'm here. Was it just I just happened to stumble upon something? Or did God lead me to that? Did God open my mind, drew his spirit, and bring me to his church? You know, is God active in our world, in our lives? There's one book I like to turn to when I think about the time and chance. I think about God's activity in our lives, and that's the book of Esther. The book of Esther, one of my favorite books in God's Word. And a lot of people I've read, they don't understand why it is in God's Word. Because if you look at the book of Esther, God's not mentioned in there. You ever thought about that or looked through there? God is not mentioned, not one word in the book of Esther. It's not God said this or God told him to do this or God's commandment here. And so some people look at this and say, well, why is that there? And the way I look at it, and we'll look at these events, because these are things that some people would just say are just time and chance that occur in the book of Esther. Or just coincidence, right? Coincidence. Things that are coincidence. But when you look at these events and you put them all together, we're going to see purpose, and you're going to see the providence of God. You're going to see God active in the lives of his people here in the book of Esther, even though it may appear to be random. So let's look at Esther chapter 1. So now it came to pass in the days of Ahasuerus, or in some translations I think it says Xerxes is the king here. It says, verse 2, in those days when King Ahasuerus sat on the throne of his kingdom, which was in Susan the citadel, then in the third year of his reign he made a feast for all his officials and servants. And it goes on here and describes this tremendous feast that he has for all his servants. It says, like here in verse 6, there were white and blue linen curtains fastened with cords of fine linen and purple and silver rods and marble pillars. And the couches were of gold and silver, on a mosaic pavement of alabaster, turquoise, and white and black marble. So that, I mean, so it's a beautiful, right? I mean, this is like a really nice feast, a beautiful thing. So he's obviously rich king, powerful man. And so in accordance with the law, the drinking was not compulsory, and it goes on. And it also tells in verse 9 that his queen was Vashti, and that she made a feast for the women. And then verse 10, and this is an event. There's several events that happen. And this is probably the first event that we could either say, is this a random event? Is it just something that happened? Or is it important to a purpose of God? And this is the first event. He says, on the seventh day, when the heart of the king was merry with wine, I guess that would mean what? He was drunk. merry with wine. He had a lot of wine. He commanded his people there, seven eunuchs who served in the presence of King Ahasuerus, to bring Queen Vashti before the king, wearing her royal crown. And some tradition says that's all he wanted to wear, was the royal crown. It doesn't say that here, but that's what some people say in tradition. But probably, based on history, possibility. In order to show her beauty to the people and the officials, for she was beautiful to behold. But Queen Vashti refused to come at the king's command. So she refused him. So whatever reasons, whatever history they had, he wanted to bring her out and parade her in front of all these drunken folks. and his thing, and she's like, I'm not coming. She refuses to do this. And because she does this, here verse 15, it says, so what shall we do to Queen Vashti according to the law? Because she did not obey the command of King Ahasuerus brought to her by the eunuchs. And verse 17, so for the queen's behavior will become known to all women, so they will despise their husbands in their eyes when they report. King Ahasuerus commanded Queen Vashti to be brought in before him, but she did not come, right? That'd be embarrassing. And it's going to cause chaos throughout the kingdom. Wives are not going to obey their husbands or whatever. So they're coming up with this. And in verse 18, he says, this very day, the noble ladies of Persia and Media will say to all the king's officials that they have heard of the behavior of the queen. Thus there will be excessive contempt and wrath. So if it pleases the king, let a royal decree go out from him, and let it be recorded in the laws of the Medes and the Persians. The Medes and the Persians, and if I know from Daniel, I know about the law of the Medes and Persians. When they make that law and they sign it with their ring, that's it. They can't change that law. So he's about to pass a law about her behavior. He says that Vashti shall come no more before the king. So she's gone. And that the king to give her royal position to another who is better than she. Why is this in the Bible, right? Why do we have this recording? Well, the first thing is, it shows you history that the king needs a new queen. And then we see who this is going to be here coming up in subsequent verses here to replace Queen Vashti. So let's go to chapter 2 here. In verse 3 it says, and let the king appoint officers in all the provinces of his kingdom, that they may gather all the beautiful young virgins to Shushan the citadel, into the women's quarters under the custody of Haggai the king's eunuch, custodian of the women, and let beauty preparations be given them. And beauty preparations, I think of probably like we have today, right? Nails and hair and all that stuff. I know for my beauty preparation to get here is I just shave and do something with my hair, and that's it, right? These are preparations that they're going to do for these women to make them as beautiful as possible for the king to see. And verse 4 says, and let the young women who please the king be queen instead of Vashti. And verse 7, and Mordecai had brought up Hadassah, that is Esther, his uncle's daughter, for she had neither father nor mother. Mordecai, he's an important person that we'll see here in a second. It's important to history. It's important to God's intervention, I would think. And we have Hadassah, Esther. So it was when the king's command and decree were heard, and when many young women were gathered at Shushan, the citadel, under the custody of Haggai, that Esther also was taken to the king's palace, and to the care of Haggai, the custodian of the women. Now the young woman pleased him, and she obtained his favor, so he readily gave her beauty preparations to her, besides her allowance, so she was getting the extra beauty, whatever that is, her hair done, or whatever they did back then for beauty preparations. Something like a spa, I guess. And she was getting these special things. In verse 10, Esther had not revealed her people or family, because she was Jewish. She was different from the Medes and Persians. She was of a different nationality. And every day Mordecai paced in front of the court of the women's quarters to learn of Esther's welfare and what was happening to her. And so in verse 16, it says, so Esther was taken to the king Ahasuerus into the royal palace in the 10th month, which is the month of Tebeth in the 7th year of his reign. And the king loved Esther more than all the other women, and she obtained grace and favor in his sight more than all the other virgins. So of all the beautiful women in the land, he picks her, right? And so you think of time and chance. You know, there's probably a lot of beautiful women. Of all of them, one of them, right, is of the Jewish descent, and he picks her. She had these extra treatments or whatever reason, he picks her to be queen instead of Vashti. So that would say, could be time and chance, could be, you know, this what the king wants, but let's put all this together, what's happening here. And so he makes a great feast for her. And then we have another story here in verse 21 about Mordecai, her uncle here. It says, so the matter became known to Mordecai, who told Queen Esther, and Esther informed the king in Mordecai's name. I'm sorry, verse 21 says, in those days while Mordecai sat within the king's gate, two of the king's eunuchs, Bigthan and Teresh, doorkeepers, became furious and sought to lay hands on the king Ahasuerus. Right? So Mordecai was at the king's gate and he overheard, just happened, right, to overhear a plot of these two bad guys who want to kill the king. And it happens to be Mordecai, right? Could have been all other people who heard it. And you know, if you ever overhear something or the right place at the right time to hear this, could be time and chance, could be just a coincidence he happened to be there, is what some would say. And so the matter became known to Mordecai, who told the queen, and the queen Esther informed the king in Mordecai's name, and when inquiry was made into the matter, it was confirmed, right? They found out this was true, and both were hanged on the gallows, and it was written in the book of the Chronicles in the presence of the king. So not only they found it, they made a special note of it. So Mordecai saved the king from assassination or from this terrible plot of these people. And that's an important thing to remember. Here in chapter 3, and we hear of another person who comes into play is Haman, who is a person who despised the Jewish people, who wanted them to be killed. And we'll see his how he despised them as we read here. And after these things, King Ahasuerus promoted Haman, the son of Hamethah, the Agite, and advanced him and set him his seat above the princes who were with him. And all the king's servants who were within the king's gate bowed and paid homage to Haman. So the king had commanded concerning him. So he had a pretty good position, and the servants were pay homage to him. So he's, you know, up there with the king. He's in good with the royalty. For so the king had commanded concerning him, but Mordecai would not bow or pay homage. So Mordecai just was like, didn't do that, right? Just ignored him. And the king's servants who were in the gate said to Mordecai, why do you transgress the king's command? And now it happened when they spoke to him daily, he would not listen to them. And then they told it to Haman to see whether Mordecai's words would stand. For Mordecai had told them he was a Jew. And when Haman saw that Mordecai did not bow or pay him homage, Haman was filled with wrath. But he disdained to lay hands on Mordecai alone, for they had told him of the people of Mordecai. And instead, Haman sought to destroy all the Jews who were throughout the whole kingdom of Ahasuerus, the people of Mordecai. Was it just because of Mordecai, or was it probably something he was going to do all along? I kind of think it's something he just kind of had this hatred, and maybe this Mordecai thing is really giving him a reason to say, hey, these people are terrible people. They won't bow down to me. They're just different folks. So he says, verse 7, in the first month, which is the month of Nisan, in the 12th year of King Ahasuerus, they cast pure, that is lots, before Haman to determine the day of the month. And it fell in the 12th month, which is the month of Adar. Then Haman said to King Ahasuerus, there is a certain people scattered and dispersed among the people in all the provinces of your kingdom. Their laws are different from all other peoples, and they do not keep the king's laws. Therefore, it is not fitting for the king to let them remain. And if it pleases the king, let a decree be written that they be destroyed, and I will pay 10,000 talents of silver to the hands of those who do the work. So the king takes his ring, and he... Like he did for his queen, right? Boom, it's law. And when the king makes a law, that's it, right? He can't change it. It's there for good. And he pretty much says, all right, Haman, you know, I'll trust your judgment. Go ahead and kill these people that you despise. And so they pass this law. And verse 13 says, and letters were sent by couriers into all the king's provinces to destroy, to kill, and to annihilate all the Jews. And that's a pretty bad thing, right? And that's the thing, like, if all the Jews were annihilated through this, well, who was someone who was going to be a descendant from these people, who was going to later be born and die for us, right? Christ. This is his descendants. If they were wiped out, would that promise of the Messiah coming from that line be there? So it's important. And so this is a terrible thing. But it seems like there's a couple of things that's already in place that might prevent this. We have a new queen who's Jewish, and we have Mordecai, who did a really good favor for the king. Then he wrote it down. So some good things. So let's see what happens here. Let's go to chapter 4, verse 10. And Mordecai finds out about this, and he enlists Esther, since she's so close to the king, to help with this. So in chapter 4, verse 10, then Esther spoke to Hapheth and gave him a command for Mordecai. All the king's servants and the people of the king's provinces know that any man or woman who goes into the inner court to the king who has not been called, he has but one law, put all to death except the one to whom the king holds out the golden scepter, that he may live. Yet I myself have not been called to go to the king these 30 days. Now she says, well, I can go to him, but you go before the king, just because she's queen doesn't mean she gets to come all the time. He tells her when to come, when he wants to see her. And says, if you come in there, he's got to take this scepter and he's got to put it out. If not, you could be dead. So she's kind of risking her life, even approaching the king in this manner. So chapter 5, verse 1. So now it happened on the third day that Esther put on her royal robes, stood in the inner court of the king's palace across from the king's house, while the king sat on his royal throne in the royal house, facing the entrance of the house. And so it was when the king saw Queen Esther standing in the court that she found favor in his sight. And the king held out to Esther the golden scepter that was in his hand. Yeah, I would say this is probably significant. I mean, how many queens had he killed? We don't really know. We know about Vashti. She comes in. He could have, what's she doing in here? Get rid of her. We'll have another beauty pageant, per se, to pick a new queen. But no, he extends the golden scepter and lets her speak. And he says in verse 3, and the king said to her, what do you wish, Queen Esther? What is your request? It shall be given to you up to half the kingdom. So Esther answered, if it pleases the king, let the king and Haman come today to the banquet that I have prepared for him. So Haman, right? And so Haman, he finds out about this and he feels pretty special, right? Verse 12, moreover, Haman, he said, besides, right? He's talking about this banquet that the queen invited to him and the king to, she's going to prepare. And I guess they're really big on banquets because they're having quite a few of them here. So it's a really nice banquet, nice meal. And so he gets invited and he feels special. So moreover, Haman said, besides, Queen Esther invited no one but me to come in with the king to the banquet that she prepared for tomorrow. I am again invited by her along with the king. Yet all this avails me nothing so long as I see Mordecai the Jew sitting at the king's gate. Then his wife Zeresh and all his friends said to him, let a gallows be made 50 cubits high, or 50 cubits, what, 75 feet, 50 cubits high. In the morning, suggest to the king that Mordecai be hanged on it, right? He wasn't going to wait to kill everybody else. He's like, I'm just through with Mordecai. Let's just go ahead and hang him. Then go merrily with the king to the banquet. And the king pleased Haman, so he had the gallows made. Again, that would seem like a random event. He just happened to, you know, get these gallows made that he's going to kill Mordecai on. And a lot of y'all know the story. It's a pretty good ending that we have here. Moving on. So here in chapter 6, gallows is built. And Esther's going to have her banquet with the king and with Haman. And we'll see. Is these events that happen here, again, is it just random chance? Is it just something that happened? Is this history? Or is it, do we see God's hand in these different things coming together to really save his people? To save his people. Alright, so here, chapter 7. So the king and Haman went to dine with the queen, verse 2. And on the second day at the banquet of wine, the king again said to Esther, what is your petition, Queen Esther? It shall be granted you. And what is your request? Up to half the kingdom, it shall be done. And then Queen Esther answered and said, I have found favor in your sight, O king. And if it pleases the king, let my life be given me at my petition and my people at my request. So she gets to the point, right? For my people have been sold. For we have been sold, my people, and I to be destroyed, to be killed, and to be annihilated. Had we been sold as male and female slaves, I would have held my tongue, although the enemy could never compensate for the king's loss. So King Ahasuerus answered and said to Queen Esther, who is he, and where is he, who has dared presume in his heart to do such a thing? And Esther said, the adversary enemy is this wicked Haman. So Haman was terrified before the king and the queen. So she just accuses him and says, here he is right there. Here's the man who wants to kill your wife that you love. She has a pretty good favor with him. And the king arose in his wrath from the banquet of wine and went to the palace of garden. He's pretty angry about this. But Haman stood before the queen Esther pleading for his life, for he saw that evil was determined against him by the king. And when the king returned from the palace garden to the place of the banquet of wine, Haman had fallen across the couch where Esther was. Just happened to fall across the couch where she is. And then the king said, will he also assault the queen? So it looked like he was assaulting her or whatever, right? He was in a compromising position. So the king just happens to walk in. It's like, what is this? Here's Haman across his couch, and it looks pretty bad. And as the word left the king's mouth, they covered Haman's face. Now, Harbonah, one of the eunuchs, said to the king, look, the gallows, 50 cubits high, which Haman made for Mordecai, who spoke good on the king's behalf, is standing at the house of Haman. Then the king said, hang him on it. And so they hanged Haman on the gallows that he prepared for Mordecai. And the king's wrath was subsided. Because of these events, because of all the things that happened, it looks to me that God's hand was in there, right? Maybe we didn't see God mentioned. And there's a lot more to the story. I just kind of summarize it for the time I had here. But what's in here, it's amazing, right? These things are not going to happen just by random. Just happen to pick a woman who's going to be the people that they are going to have a law to be killed. Just happened to be at the gate, right? Because in the story, the king asked Haman, what should I do for a guy that did this for me? He was looking through the things. Haman said, well, you should hold a parade for him and do all this thing. And so these events are the hand of God. That's why it's in God's word. We can see God's events. It's the providence of God. Maybe it's not fire from heaven, but God's active, right? God's very active in this story. I heard a story of a man in God's church. You may have heard it, where he was stranded with his car. He told us at the feast, and a few times I've heard it. He was stranded with his car, and he needed water because it was overheated. And he said a guy pulled up with all these jugs of water, and he said, "You need some water?" He's like, "Well, yeah, I need water." And then he asked him, "So why do you have all this water with you?" He said, "Well, I just had this feeling in the morning to wake up and fill up all these jugs of water and go out with it." So things like that happen. And that guy probably couldn't have listened to that, right? And then he would have been stranded out there with no water and wouldn't have a story to tell. But again, we can have those things in our lives because God interacts through us. Let's turn to Acts chapter 16. Acts chapter 16, verse 6. Acts 16, verse 6, it says, now when they had gone through, and I'm so bad with these names, you probably noticed that, but I'm going to do my best. They had gone through Phrygia and a region of Galatia. They were forbidden by the Holy Spirit to preach the word in Asia. So God, right, through His Spirit, didn't want them to preach the word in Asia. So how did they know that? Probably they felt it. God's presence told them, don't go to Asia. Felt bad about it. And I guess they listened. And verse 7, after they had come to Masuria, they tried to go into Biphum, but the Spirit did not permit them, right? They wanted to go here, but it says God's Spirit didn't permit them to go there. So passing by Mysia, verse 8, they came to Troas. And in a vision appeared to Paul in the night, a man of Macedonia stood and pleaded with him, saying, come over to Macedonia and help us. And that's a pretty clear vision, right? I don't think any of us see those that I know of. Not that it couldn't happen. But, so God was directing his people. And there's plenty of occasions in Acts where God's Spirit told them they should go here or do this. And I was thinking about it, well, what if God's Spirit told you to go somewhere and you didn't? Because we have that free will. We have that choice, right? So that's how God kind of interacts through the world. He interacts through us, right? Maybe we know somebody in need. Somebody who needs something, and we feel in our heart, man, I should help that person. I need to get some money. I need to do something. I need to go help this person. And if I go help them, God's Spirit gets me to help that person. That's God, right? Through us, right? Interacting in lives, right? So that does happen. When I say we watch the television show or whatever it is that brought us into God's church, God told somebody to do that in a sense, right? They felt compelled to do these things. So we can listen to God or we can ignore it. But God's presence is there, definitely in our lives, because God interacts through us, through His people. And if you look at the events that brought you here, right, the events that brought you to God's church, I see everything that happened to me, and I cannot say that that was time and chance. God, for me, I mean, we all have our own story, right? But for me, and I guess for other people, and I've heard this, right, because we've talked about this, we talk about this quite a bit, that God, He does a lot to draw us, to pull us into His church. I remember, there's a blizzard today, isn't there, up in New York, and I was thinking back to when I first was baptized, and that was in 93. So that's, is that 20 years? Wow, well, that's 20 years ago. 20 years ago, real, actually no, 20 years ago, maybe today even. I may have to go look at my baptism certificate. But maybe 20 days from the day that I was baptized, because it was in February. And a few weeks later, in March, early March, we had a blizzard in Alabama. I don't know if it was in Texas, but I know in Alabama, in the southeast, we had a foot and a half of snow come through. And this was, this happened to me about a month after I was baptized. And I remember this happened specifically. And I was working at a place called Long John Silver's. I think there's one down the road here. And I worked about an hour from home. I still live with my parents. And it was snowing, and it was starting to snow pretty, you know, the blizzard was coming in. It was probably like 3 or 4 o'clock. The weather people were saying, you know, y'all need to close down and get home and get safe. And I asked the people, you know, I'm young. Now I'd probably just like, you know, just, I got to get out of here. But then I was like, you know, can I leave? Cause I need to get home because I got an hour to drive. Maybe it would be a good idea if I left now to get home before the snow comes. They said, it's not going to be nothing. Don't worry about it. So I waited, and I was working. I worked to maybe 6, almost 7. And I said, you know, it looks like it's a pretty good bit of snow out there, maybe not that much. So maybe I should drive home. So I got into my car, and I didn't really have much of I wasn't really prepared for a blizzard. We're not prepared for a blizzard here, are we? Right? You're not prepared for a blizzard, especially in Alabama. So I had a really thin coat. And I got into my car. I said, well, I'm going to drive home because I need to get home. It's a blizzard. And I got onto the interstate, and I kind of noticed. I was like, why am I the only one out here? Right? Because, on the interstate, I'm the only one out there on this interstate. And the snow's getting pretty thick. And it's getting kind of hard to drive through. Because you ever drive through snow and it gets to like a foot. And I'm getting to where I'm sliding. And then I slid off the road. And I didn't know where I was at, right? Because there's nobody on the road. It's like dark at night. I slide off the road, and I get out, look at my car, and I'm in a little thin jacket. And I was like, well, there's no way I'm starting this back up again because I can't get out of it. So I got out and started walking. So here I'm walking in the snow coming down in this blizzard in Alabama, walking. And I walk up an overpass, and I'm thinking, wasn't I just baptized in God's church? Like, why am I in such a... Because this is a pretty bad situation. I know sometimes we find ourselves in these situations. But I'm thinking, man, this is terrible, you know. And freezing to death, and it's a blizzard. I could figure no way to get home. But yet, what? God is active in our lives. He wanted me to be baptized, and I, you know, asked for God's help. And when I asked, you know, and that's what we all would do. We'd ask for God's help. I say, God, I need help. This is, you know, what am I going to do? And somebody pulls up right next to me in like a four-wheel drive. Opens up the door, and they're like, get in. I was like, okay. So I got in, and the guy's like, you know, where are you going? I said, well, I'm headed to Birmingham. Well, I'm not going that way. And he turns around, and we're headed somewhere else. It's like, well, I'm happy to be going anywhere, right? So we go up to, I think, his girlfriend's house, and he's like, well, let's go back to your car, see if we can pull it out. So we go back to my car, and this guy can't even see the car. He's like, where is the car? You know, it's covered now, completely covered with snow. And so he says, you know what, I'm going to take you home. And so he goes, and I figured it was like 80 miles out of his way to my house in the four-wheel drive and drives me to my doorsteps. And people say, well, you think that could have been an angel? I said, I don't know. He kind of cussed like a sailor. So probably wasn't an angel, right? But was it the providence of God that God had somebody there to help me in a situation, help me, young in the faith, and brought me to my doorstep. So God is active, right? And I look at that, I could say, was that time and chance? I said, no. God answered my prayer. And He's done that quite a bit. He does it quite a bit for us here. And we should be grateful for that. And I want to conclude. I want to look at Romans chapter 8, verse 28. So, yeah, we have time and chance. Yes, we have, you know, the world. We have you know, freedom of choice. A lot of people are messing it up for us good folks. We understand that. He says, though, verse 28, and we know, right? And this is something, yeah, I guess we know this, that all things work together for good to those who love God. All right, so no matter what it is, and it could be some bad stuff, it's going to all work for the good in the end. And I know God really is working with everybody. In the whole, everybody who's ever born, God is working with everybody because we see His plan. He wants everybody eventually to be in that kingdom. And I think the experiences we have here are definitely preparation. Preparation, training, education is what we have in this world, right? Education so that we can be in the kingdom of God. And He uses it. Whether time and chance or intervention, He says, all things work together for good to those who love God, to those who are called.